You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
Live from Chicken Town, this is the Flopcast episode 488.
On flopcast.net.
Yes, yes, hello, Cornflake.
Hello, hello, hello.
I'm back. I came back.
I am so glad you came back.
I was down south. Now I'm back up here. You know who else is back from DragonCon? It's the mayor of Chickentown.
Yay, here I am.
You're back.
Felicity, the mayor of Chickentown is here. You have not been on the Flopcast in a long, long, long time.
Yeah, my appearances have been kept to a minimum this year, as I've been dealing with a lot of chicken-related issues.
So it's all part of the terms of your parole. But now...
Oh, I wasn't going to bring that up, but...
The judge has agreed, has allowed, to make a special exception in this case, because this is our DragonCon review show.
Sorry to let the chicken out of the bag there, Felicity.
We're going to talk everything that happened down at DragonCon. Before we get into that, however, Cornflake...
Yeah?
What's going on for National Whatever Day?
National Whatever Day!
A local actor's birthday. We have Amy Poehler turning 50.
She is local. Yeah, she's from... Is she from Massachusetts?
She is. She grew up in Burlington, Massachusetts. And her birthday is September 16th. She's turning 50 years old.
Okay. Yeah, man, we love Amy Poehler.
We sure do. I mean, I think you probably love her for Parks and Recreation. That's something we've talked about a lot on the show. I loved her in Inside Out as Joy.
Okay. I still have not seen that.
Yeah, same here.
I'm way behind on all the Pixar stuff. Amy, I first saw on Late Night with Conan O'Brien. She would pop up in sketches and bits that they were doing on Conan's show, like way back in the 90s. They did a regular bit back then. They would announce that Andy Richter, you know, Conan's sidekick, Andy Richter's little sister Tracy was in the audience, and it was Amy Poehler. and she stood out to me back then. She was very young. And really, really funny as Andy's little sister. That was pre-Saturday Night Live, of course.
That's cool.
Yeah. Also, and Undeclared also, right? She was a semi-regular, again, this is still pre-SNL, the sort of follow-up series after Freaks and Geeks. They did Undeclared, which was set at a college, and she was one of the students at the college.
And speaking of Saturday Night Live, she and Tina Fey were the first female co-anchors of The Weekend Update.
Yeah, they were great together.
Definitely. And I liked her with Seth Meyers as well.
Wet Hot American Summer would have been in that era as well, right?
Yeah.
She's done it all.
All right.
And in movies, too. We haven't talked a lot about the movies other than Inside Out, but she was in...
Baby Mama was one of the movies.
Oh, yeah, with Tina Fey. Tina Fey.
She did the ice skating movie, Blades of Glory, also.
Yeah, with Will Arnett. They played brother and sister.
Yeah, they were like a skating couple. Mm-hmm. And Chicken Joe was in that movie also. What's his name?
Napoleon Dynamite.
Napoleon Dynamite, that guy. Yeah, that guy.
John Hader.
Thank you.
Yep. Is it? I don't know.
Yeah, it is. John Hader.
Okay.
So just another, you know, ball of talent. Just one of those people that always delivers. We always enjoy Amy Poehler. And when I go to write her name, if I'm writing out the name Poehler, I never know if the H comes before or after the L. And I get it wrong every time.
Oh, yeah.
That's my only problem with Amy Poehler. And it's a big problem. Because, you know, I probably have to write her name, you know, probably 20, 30 times a day. It comes up a lot.
Well, I see the O and the E in her name, and I always think of amoeba. And is it like, is it Amy Poehler or is it Amy Poehler?
It's a very tricky name. She has a lot in common with the amoeba. They're both single-celled organisms.
Oh, they both have amazing smiles, you've got to admit.
That's true. Those are most the two main similarities, yes. The smile and the fact that they are single cells. Happy birthday, Amy Poehler. And just to keep moving along, we're still in our 80s episodes, right? And this is Flopcast 488, so we're up to the year 1988. And we're really short on time, tonight because we've just got to get through everything that happened at Dragon Con. So this is, we're just trying to fulfill our contractual obligations at this point to acknowledge the year 1988. So we're going to be super quick. I just pulled up the Billboard charts for this week in 1988, and I'm just going to flip through all of the top 40 and just see what pops out of me. Number 40 was Kylie Minogue, The Locomotion.
Nice.
Remember that. That was Carol King wrote that, didn't she?
Yes, and I'm sure it was done by some girl group first.
Oh, yeah, yeah. That was an old song back in the 60s or whatever, and then Kylie covered it. That was one of her few American hits back then.
That's all I remember from 1988. Everything else you tell me is going to be like news to me. Because
all we remember is Kylie singing The Locomotion.
Yes, The Locomotion with Kylie Minogue was just all 1988 was to me.
Wow. Okay, well, you know what, Cornflake? In that case, let's just stop right there. I said we were going to be quick. Let's be even quicker than I thought. There you go. According to Cornflake, that's 1988. That's all right. That works for me.
That is 1988 in a nutshell. And, fight me.
Okay. In the interest of time, I completely agree.
Oh, that's good, because I'm really excited to hear about Dragon Con.
All right, let's do this. So, you know, I'm at Dragon Con every single year. Last year, of course, Dragon Con was virtual. It was I did Dragon Con from right where I'm recording from right now last year. My schedule was practically as packed as usual for virtual Dragon Con, but it all happened from everybody stayed home and, you know, was on Zoom or whatever. And this year they did it for real. There was actual real Dragon Con just this past weekend. And so it was weird, you know?
I bet.
But it happened and we were there. I was there and the mayor was there as well.
We were both there.
We went creeping down to Atlanta, Georgia. This is a giant science fiction, fantasy, and all things pop culture and everything else kind of a convention every Labor Day weekend down in Atlanta. It's tens of thousands of people. It fills downtown Atlanta, like five giant hotels fill up with people and programming and events, as well as a couple of other exhibition halls as well. It's gaming and concerts and parties and a bunch of nerds like us gathering to be silly. Costumes are everywhere. It's a giant costuming convention. All the greatest costumers in the world gather at Dragon Con every year. Just a remarkable event that we've been honored to be a part of for the last several years. And so back down there we went. Major safety protocols were in place, of course. So masks were mandatory everywhere in Dragon Con. Vaccinations were mandatory. And many other safety protocols were in place. There were lots of other changes to keep things as safe as possible. I was of two minds, like during my panels and stuff, looking out at the audience from the stage, and you're just looking at a room of face masks, you know, mm-hmm. which looks very strange. It was, you know, sad on the one hand, that, like, look what it's come to, look what we've had to do, just looking at all these people wearing masks. And then it also was kind of nice. It was kind of cool. And that, look at everybody coming together and doing this so that we can do this.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
So they did it. Very, very strange for us, especially because I've been so super locked down, you know, through this whole thing for the past year and a half. We went to see Freeze Pop in concert a couple of weeks ago, and that's like the first thing that I had done since last March. And so this was the second thing I've done, and that's quite a thing to do after being locked down all year, the whole way down. You know, I get down there a couple of days in advance and go into the airport. This is my first time on a bus since March of 2020. Then this is my first time in Boston since early last year. Obviously, first time in an airport, first time on an airplane, all these things that I hadn't done in many, many months just made the whole trip down very weird. Suddenly I'm among, you know, human beings.
Yeah, it was pretty surreal.
And you know how I feel about people.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We do. We certainly do.
I also was really reeling it in as far as my activities at Dragon Con. You know, normally it's hanging out with people and getting together, and all sorts of extra events and gatherings are planned. And I was not a part of any of that this year. And so even though I got down there Wednesday and didn't do anything like that, I was down there essentially because I was scheduled to be there Wednesday, but It's like, okay, here I am. I'm just going to be hiding in a hotel room working on my presentations.
I'm sure that felt really weird.
So I just, you know, I found a burrito.
just lying there on the...
Yes, I figured.
Did you locate it by using a burrito treasure map?
Yeah, I've got a... It looks like a metal detector.
It's the burrito finder.
Especially if you adjust it just right, it will find burritos. So I just... Yeah, pretty much all my meals the whole weekend were just pick up food, bring it back to the hotel room because I did not want to eat indoors anywhere among people. Mm-hmm. So got a burrito, brought it back to the room, was just working on stuff. That was it. Thursday, pretty much the same thing. That's, you know, DragonCon officially opened on Thursday. I went and got my badge as an attending professional.
You don't have to stand in line among the plebeians.
I don't go to the regular badge pickup. There's a separate little room for a attending professional and guest badge. I feel like in my case, they should put professional in sarcastic quotation marks.
Or like Comic Sans.
Got my badge. I did see a few people there. I ran into Jason and Rita Della Torre, who are good friends of the ESO Network. Said hi to them. Sue was there, you know, who I work with on all kinds of panels and stuff. Saw Sue. I saw Emily, our friend Emily, who works on the science track. So those were the first human beings who I recognized, which was nice. But that was it. That's all I did as far as official DragonCon stuff all day Thursday. I was like, all right, got my badge. I'm out of here.
And that's the day that I arrived.
You arrived nice and early. I found you somehow. We must, I assume, did we get more burritos? Did we use my burrito detector? I don't remember what happened.
Yeah, I imagine the mayor had a burrito and you used your detector and you found her.
Your burrito detector detected the burrito that I had.
Yeah. You know what I had for you, though? I surprised you with, there's an official DragonCon mead.
Yes.
It's called DragonCon Dragon's Nectar. They started this last year, even though nobody was there last year. They started making it last year.
They were going to debut it last year.
But it's an official DragonCon mead. It has the convention logo on the can. And yeah, I picked up a 4-pack of DragonCon mead.
Yes.
That sounds absolutely delicious.
Which we cracked open, you know, up in the room, hiding from all of humanity.
We have a clink like our friends at But First Let's Talk Nerdy.
Yes, in honor of Brittany and Martha, who normally we hang out with all throughout DragonCon, they were not able to join us. But yes, we clinked some mead as they would have with us.
Please tell me it was as amazing as it sounds.
It's pretty yummy. There's actual dragon fruit in it, so they're not fooling around.
I wondered. I'm like, man, they gotta find a way to put dragon fruit in something like
that. They did it. Yeah, many friends of ours, you know, including, of course, Martha and Brittany and Jessica and Sergio, a bunch of friends were missing, were not able to come this year, and which is totally understandable. So we were missing lots of people, but...
There were still a lot of people there, and we got to see some good friends.
Still plenty of people, absolutely. So Friday morning, the first thing I did was a panel called Pennyworth, Union of Ravens. So this was on the American Science Fiction and Fantasy Media track, which covers like current TV and movie stuff. Pennyworth is a series that most people have not seen because it's on some weird channel or streaming thing that nobody knows about.
One of those.
But Pennyworth it's Alfred Pennyworth. This is Batman's butler, Alfred, you know. This is Alfred as a young man in England, and it's set sort of in the late 60s or thereabouts. So it's young Alfred's wacky adventures back in England. Very cool show. It's very stylized, and they've done 2 seasons of it.
Well, I love a good retro 60s show.
That was my first assignment, was moderating the Pennyworth panel. And that was with, you know, Kelly runs that track, and she is wonderful. I saw our friend Jessa as well when I got there, so I was starting to encounter more familiar upper half of faces as I made my way.
More familiar eyeballs?
Yep. And right after that was the first Land of the Lost panel. Yeah, as we mentioned in our preview show, Wesley Yore and Kathleen Coleman, who were the stars of Land of the Lost back in the 70s, were guests at DragonCon once again this year. So they played Will and Holly, brother and sister, back on the old classic Croft show. And I had the honor of hosting their Q&A panels all weekend.
That's so cool.
Yeah, so their panels were scheduled for the big ballrooms at Dragon Con. So that was fun. I got to be in these giant rooms. Got in there. I found Joe, our buddy Joe Crow, co-director of the American Sci-Fi Classics track. We met with the cast. Wesley and Kathleen came in. They're great. Super nice. Really fun to hang out with. And it was really an honor to be on stage with Kathleen and Wesley.
Yeah, they're just great. And they really appreciated Kevin as well.
You came to this panel, right?
Yes, that was the first one was the one that I went to.
This was the Friday one. Yeah, because we did Land of the Lost Friday, Saturday, and Sunday to accommodate everybody who wanted to see Will and Holly in person. So yeah, you were there. We introduced Will and Holly, Wesley and Kathleen. They came out. And then we had also on stage was a Slee Stack.
You had a Slee Stack on stage?
Actual Slee Stack on stage. Yes, they travel with a Slee Stack.
They have their own Slee Stack.
A stage Slee Stack.
Yes, yes. They come out and then they also introduce a Slee Stack who comes, you know, staggering out, hissing, and is very, very funny. And sits there as part of the panel for the whole thing. And occasionally will join in with some hissing or whatnot.
Yeah, he really had the hissing down. That was that was entertaining.
So I'd been brushing up on my Land of the Lost all summer to get ready for this. So I'd been rewatching the whole series. And I've read Kathleen's book as well. Kathleen Coleman, she put out her autobiography a year or so ago. The book is called Run, Holly, Run. And it's her life story, and it's wild. She has had quite a life. I mean, there's some wild stuff in there. There's some dark stuff. She's been through some tough times. Pretty incredible story. I do recommend her book, Run, Holly, Run. So I was loaded up with all sorts of things I wanted to discuss with them, which we did. So, you know, we're talking Slee Stacks and the Pikuni, you know, like Chaka and Enoch and everything from Land of the Lost. We got into such a special show. Some of it looks a little silly, but a lot of it still looks cool, and a lot of it holds up.
Yeah.
And a lot of the stories hold up. It was for Saturday morning, they did some sophisticated science fiction stories because they hired a bunch of serious science fiction writers. They hired the Star Trek writers. Many of their writers had worked on the original Star Trek series.
I was unaware of that.
Yeah. So it was David Gerrold and Don Glut, DC Fontana, yeah, Walter Koenig, who played Chekhov on Star Trek. He wrote for Land of the Lost also. Larry Niven and a bunch of people, very, very impressive writers. So that was just the coolest show back then. There was nothing like it.
I'm so glad that they get a good crowd for those shows.
Yeah. And when the panel was over, I had some ribbons for them. I surprised them with some Land of the Lost badge ribbons because I had printed up green badge ribbons with Slee Stacks on them. And they say, Run, Holly, Run. Mm-hmm. And set them up with a couple hundred ribbons to give away, which they did. Because a couple of days later, Wesley said to me, we ran out. We were giving ribbons to everybody that came to see us at our autograph booth. And I had to go fishing through my bag, and I had one more pack of Slee Stack ribbons, which I handed right over to them.
Since they were in so awesome.
High demand at their booth. Yeah, so they had a lot of fun with our Slee Stack badge ribbons, so that was nice. I had a nice time with Wesley and Kathleen. Now, right after that, I had to go running over to the Hilton, to a different hotel, because I was scheduled for the first time to do something with the digital media track. Digital Media Track covers podcasting. It used to be the podcasting track. Then they expanded it to include like YouTube and Twitch and whatever else, you know, the kids are into. So ESO Network Director Mike Faber had invited me to be part of a panel called The Pros and Cons of Being on a Podcast Network. So I get over to the Hilton. I get down to the Digital Media Track room. Go inside. They're setting up. Mike was not there yet. I didn't see Mike Faber anywhere in the room, but I kind of half recognized the names of a couple of other people that were on the panel. So I introduced myself and the panel starts and the guy way down at the other end of the table, the guy hosting it. And meanwhile, still no Faber. Panel starts. Mike's still not there. I thought that's weird. Mike must be running late or something went wrong. Something happened. But all right, here we go. I'll try to represent ESO Network all by myself. The panel starts. The guy, the moderator's down at the other end of the table, and he announces, okay, we're going to get started. And the subject for today's podcast is the future of the superhero genre. and he names the podcast that he's the host of. And I'm looking around like, what? What are we talking about? I'm here for the pros and cons of being on a podcast network. So I'm kind of freaking out. I'm looking at my schedule. Everybody's introducing themselves. It gets down to me. So I introduced myself and go back to trying to figure out what happened, looking at my schedule. Well, the digital media track has two rooms.
Whoop. Oh.
There was another room right next to the room I was in. That was the room I was supposed to be in. So my panel and Mike Faber were like 15 feet away. So I'm trying to figure out what to do. And I thought I could like interrupt this and say, excuse me, I'm in the wrong room. I'm so sorry. And, you know, disrupt this panel and then go next door and disrupt the other panel, which I assume has started at this point. But then I thought, all right, this guy's recording a podcast right now. I don't want to completely break up the flow of this show, the audio that he's recording.
Sure.
The subject was the future of the superhero genre in movies and TV. And I thought, well, I know this subject, coincidentally, so I thought, all right, I guess I'm doing this panel instead.
Oh, this is awesome, because when you started this story, I'm picturing you pulling something like out of Clerks. I'm not even supposed to be here today.
I should have screamed out like Dante in Clerks, yes.
But your solution is even better.
What if it had been some sort of podcast on something you had no idea about?
If it was something I was completely unfamiliar with, it would have been much more awkward.
Yes.
Right.
I might have just had to
step out for a drink of water that lasts an entire podcast panel.
Yeah, that's a good idea. Excuse me, I'll be right back, and then just never come back.
Never come back.
Yeah.
But you did not plot an escape.
Nope, there I was. And again, you know, yeah, but by coincidence, I could speak on this subject. So I did this guy's podcast. As soon as it was over, I went down to the other end of the table and I was like, excuse me, I'm so sorry. I kind of crashed this panel accidentally. I'm not supposed to be here. I had my schedule out. I'm like, look, you know, see, this is what happened. And they thought it was funny. They were fine. Then I had to go next door and apologize to the other group of people. So I go in there. There's Mike.
Sorry, like, Mike.
Hey. Yes, Mike. Mike and Judy. And again, they also just thought it was very funny.
Right.
In fact, Mike specifically said, Cornflake is going to love hearing about this on the Flopcast.
Yes. He knows me so well. So that's all as you're talking about this, I'm like, this is totally a Cornflake move that Kevin pulled.
So that's arguably the dumbest thing I did at Dragon Con this this year was I went to the wrong room, did the wrong show.
That's like the story of my life right there. So good on you.
Yep. That was all we had scheduled that afternoon.
Yeah, I had actually, so prior to going to the Land of the Lost panel, I had messaged our friends Adam and Shayna, and they were about to go to a science panel. So I met up with them, and our friend Nicole also wound up coming to that panel, and so did our friend Tim. And Emily was on that panel.
Nicole, the noisy astronomer?
Yes.
Yes. We know a noisy astronomer, Cornflake.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I love the noisy astronomer.
Right after that, we met up with Jessica, Tim's wife.
Yeah, this was a rare opportunity to go off-site and actually have like a pleasant evening with friends. Because in a normal year, I just would not have time to do that. Because I'm just always circling around. I don't want to miss anything at Dragon Con. This year, if I wasn't scheduled to be somewhere, I was not there.
You're right. So,
yeah.
So, yeah, the rest of the afternoon and evening, we were free. And, yeah, Tim and Jessica kindly invited a few of us to go hang out on the back deck at their house. And, you know, got some takeout. So, a lovely evening of outdoor dining with friends with some birds. You know, they got cardinals flying around back there. So, we, you know, chomped some food and watched the birds.
I recognize the cardinals cheeping from our own local cardinals, so it was fun to try to spot them.
Their cardinals looked bigger than our cardinals, and I'm not sure if that was just a trick of the distance they were at or the perspective or what, but
Maybe they're feeding them something.
They're feeding them burritos. They're eating burritos. They've got those cardinal burrito detectors like I was using.
Oh, wow, yeah.
That makes for some giant birds.
Bird burritos.
But yeah, that was very nice hanging out with Jessica and Tim and Adam and Shayna. And then we had to jump in a Lyft and get back down to Dragon Con because Friday night was the classic sci-fi charity lock-in event where they lock the doors, figuratively.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about this before Dragon Con.
They show a bad movie and you have to pay to get out. And they raise money for Dragon Con's charity doing this every year, which was this year it was Big Brothers, Big Sisters. And this year the movie was Howard the Duck.
Yes.
And I wanted to be there because I made those Sleestak ribbons, which I gave to the cast of Land of the Lost. I also made Howard the Duck ribbons.
Kevin made three different ribbons this year.
This was a big ribbon year for us, but I had these new yellow ribbons printed with an image of Howard the Duck on them. And yeah, I issued a ribbon to everybody that was brave enough to show up for the Howard the Duck screening.
I think that made it worthwhile to show up for a movie that you'd want to pay to get out of.
Yeah, so I didn't hear what the final amount was, but hopefully they raised quite a few bucks that night, because a lot of people were kindly enough or brave enough or crazy enough to show up for a late night screening of Howard the Duck. I didn't stick around for the whole movie. I was there for maybe 15, 20 minutes or so. I figured I'd stay through the duck boobs. And that happens very early on. That's when Howard is still on his home duck planet. The notorious duck boob scene, you know?
Yeah, I think I've seen that because I've only seen the very beginning of the film.
Yeah, it's one of the most horrifying moments in the history of cinema.
It is.
I would imagine a lot of people cashed out at that point.
Yeah. I think they probably raised a couple of $1,000 as soon as...
Then and there.
I'm out.
As soon as the duck boobs were on screen, yeah.
I would pay not to see that.
That's a moneymaker, absolutely. So I was kind of hanging in the back of the room while Howard was playing, and Joe, track co-director Joe Crow, he was over on the other side of the room, but then I got a terxt from Joe... Because I was scheduled to be on the Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends 40th anniversary panel the next morning, but Joe sent me a text asking if I could cover Saturday's Land of the Lost cast panel. Could I handle Will and Holly once again? So I said, yeah, absolutely. I will do that. Because I knew Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends were in good hands because we had terrific people scheduled for that as well. So got out of the Howard screening, and Saturday morning started with Rolla panel.
Roll a panel!
Yes, and I was there. This is probably the earliest thing that I attended the whole weekend.
You were there, and Kate was there. Our friend Kate from the Strange Animals podcast.
Kate Shaw!
Yes, it was great to see her.
That was my first time seeing Kate that weekend, and I only got to talk to her for like 5 seconds, because I had to get up on stage, and we had technical issues. It took a long time to get my laptop connected to the screens in the room that were projecting my images for the Rolla panel. So I had prepared slides to pop up on the screen during Rolla panel this year, which I think worked well. That was nice, having the visual. Because as we spoke about in our preview episode, I worked with track directors Gary and Joe on this year's Rolla panel to develop what we called Saturday Morning Live. And every spot on the die Rolla panel is we have a 20-sided die. Each side of the die corresponds to some TV show or movie or whatever. We discuss that topic for 5 minutes, then we roll again. So it's sort of a fast-paced blaze through as many mini panels as we can, all in one crazy panel. That's Rolla panel. So this year we did Saturday Morning Live, where everything on the die was a live-action Saturday morning TV show, such as Land of the Lost, but also all the Croft stuff, H.R. Puffin stuff was on there, the Filmation stuff, Shazam and Isis are on there, Pee-wee's Playhouse, the Weird Al show, you know, everything was on the die. And I love that stuff. So I was certainly ready to discuss some Saturday Morning Live stuff. We didn't have the usual die this year. There's usually a guy named Mike who designs a beautiful 20-sided die. He custom builds one for each Rolla panel with an image for each show or movie all over the die. Really gorgeous. He was not available this year, but then Sue tracked down a giant inflatable 20-sided die.
Ooh.
So we had an even bigger D20 than usual this year. Mm-hmm. We missed having Mike there and having his beautiful handmade creations, but this got us through.
Not a bad substitution.
It worked. Yeah, it was still very funny because it was just giant. And this one, people could really throw this one because we had to be very careful normally. You have to kind of very gently roll Mike's D20 because it's a very delicate work of art. This one you could really let fly.
Yeah, I think it bounced, you know, they deliberately bounced it off of people's heads.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It got dangerous.
That sounds like my kind of danger, though.
Yeah, but that was fun. We got into everything, you know, Croft Super Show and Electra Woman and Dinah Girl. Covered it all Saturday morning. That was great. And right after that, though, I had to go running over to the Hilton for Land of the Lost. So I was covering Land of the Lost Saturday edition. So I went over there, met up with Wesley and Kathleen and the Sleestack once again to do their second cast panel. And again, just super fun working with them. I was going to say this is kind of a humble brag, but I guess it's just a brag. but Wesley...
A not-so-humble brag.
Wesley actually, at the very beginning of the panel, he told the audience that I was the best moderator they'd ever had.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That feels good.
I almost just broke down in tears right there, but I always told myself I would never cry in front of a Sleestack. So I kept it together. We got through the panel. That was great. Land of the Lost, panel number 2. And right after that, actually the one thing I did all weekend where I wasn't on stage, I made one exception. I did duck into another thing that was happening right after that. A guest that was a late addition to Dragon Con. In fact, we didn't even mention him in our preview show because he had not been announced yet. They had Louis Gossett Jr.
Yeah.
Appearing at Dragon Con.
That's a name I've not heard in quite some time.
It was so cool to see Louis Gossett Jr. I have never known him to appear at any convention. That's not a name I ever recall hearing on a guest list. But I thought, I got to go see Lou Gossett Jr., you know?
Of course.
But it was just nonstop Q&A with Louis Gossett Jr., like just a long line of people immediately formed because everybody wanted to talk to this guy. I mean, what a career from, you know, an officer and a gentleman, and he was in Roots. You know, he was talking about making Roots back in the 70s. We've been watching the DVDs of The Powers of Matthew Starr, which was a crazy, goofy, early 80s science fiction series he did.
And of course, he was in HBO's Watchmen most recently.
What a triumph that was, that such a fantastic special series.
And he was a very important character.
Yeah. He mentioned at one point during his Q&A that his great-grandmother was a slave.
Wow.
You know, that's, you know, to bring it home, how recent this horrifying history of ours was and is. And I think the year was 1952. He talked about she was still alive in the 50s. He said she was 115 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
My goodness.
Amazing history just in his personal life story.
Yeah.
And he did indeed also discuss Enemy Mine.
Yay!
Old favorite of ours, more 80s science fiction.
Yes.
We did a Patreon show.
That's right.
About Enemy Mine. If you sign up for a ESO Network Patreon, the mayor and I did a Patreon edition of the Flopcast all about Enemy Mine, starring Louis Gossett Jr. But he did a little bit of the voice.
Oh my goodness. He still remembered
during his Q&A. He did the voice and he mentioned that like he'd be in makeup for like 5 hours.
Oh, that does not sound comfortable.
You know, because he was completely covered in that remarkable.
Yeah, very lizard-like kind of alien.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So he said he'd be in makeup for 5 hours, and then Dennis Quaid would come rolling in like he was out at a disco that night. He would just come strolling in.
I can totally see that happening.
Poor Louis Gossett Jr. buried under his crazy makeup. Yeah. But what a special guest. Really a nice surprise at the last minute to add Lou Gossett Jr. to the lineup. So I did make a point of ducking in and catching at least a little bit of his panel.
I'm glad. I wish I had gone to that. But I had a panel during your second interview with Will and Holly. I was on a recording of Earth Station Who, which also doubled as a panel, covering the Doctor Who TV movie 25th anniversary. And this was in between the classic series ending and, you know, the show being rebooted in 2005. There was a TV movie that aired in 1996, which didn't really go anywhere. It didn't go to series, but the actor who played the Doctor in that one-off was Paul McGann, and he wound up doing a lot of audios and really having more of a life in the character than anyone expected.
So you were on the Brit track then?
Yes, that was in the Hilton on the Brit track.
Cornflake, there's a Brit track.
I love that about Dragon Con.
They cover all the British stuff.
Yeah.
I've never been to the Brit track.
I would be all over the Brit track if I was
yes,
at Dragon
you
Con.
Would. So this was Earth Station Who, which is a podcast, of course, right here on the ESO network. So this would have been with Mike and Mike, I assume.
Mike and a third Mike. Michael Faulkner was on that as well.
That's way too many mics.
And then Sue Kissenweather was the other non-Mike.
Oh, nice. Sue was there, too. Yes. Oh, Sue is the best. That's a stellar lineup, then, that you were a part of for Earth Station Who. Nice.
Yeah.
So meanwhile, I had to go running over to the Hyatt to do something with the comics track. And that's the first time I'd ever done anything with that track.
Did you wind up on the wrong panel again?
Yeah. Well, this was with Mike Faber, of course.
So you made sure he was there this time.
Believe me, I was still hearing about my mishap from the day before. But this was also with all the Michaels, because I had to go over to the comics track at the Hyatt. We did the Justice Society of America 80th anniversary. And this was me, and then Michael and Michael and Michael. That is Michaels, Faber, Gordon, and Bailey. Michael Bailey from the Fortress of Baileytude led our discussion about 80 years of the JSA.
Very good.
Yeah, which we'd done in podcast form a few months back, I think, this exact same group. The four of us had done the same topic of the JSA on Earth Station 1. My idea was to just take the audio from that podcast we'd done and just play it, and then we could just lip sync to it.
That doesn't really seem fair.
Instead of thinking of anything new to say, you know. And the lip syncing wouldn't even have to be perfect because, you know, we're all wearing masks. So who's going to know?
Oh, It's a foolproof plan.
It would have been so simple.
So it would have just been a lot of raising of eyebrows when it was your turn to talk.
Yes. I think it would have worked. But that idea got shot down. So we actually did a whole new discussion about the JSA, which was great. You know, love all the old superheroes from the Justice Society. And in fact, there was one appropriate costumer in the audience. There was a guy in an old school Golden Age Green Lantern costume in the front row. So when the panel was over, we brought that guy up on stage and we took a picture with the panelists with the Green Lantern, which came out really nice. The picture came out, it looked like an Alex Ross painting.
It is pretty cool.
Because Alex Ross has done paintings with just everybody lined up like that, and it's black background, and there's the Green Lantern. So yeah, as soon as I looked at the picture, I was like, oh, this looks like the cover of Kingdom Come.
Yeah, we'll have to put that on the show notes.
Yeah, we'll have all our photos up. Absolutely. What were you doing later that afternoon / evenings? I know you were busy with stuff.
This was my busiest day, and yeah, I didn't wind up seeing anything else that you were on.
I wasn't on anything after that.
Okay.
You didn't miss anything.
There was a panel on Superman 2.
Oh, yeah.
In the American Sci-Fi Classics track, and that just, I think Michael Bailey had a conflict. He would have been the natural person to discuss that. So there was a Michael Bailey-shaped hole in the panel, but we had a good discussion. There was a good discussion, and I actually contributed some details that the panelists did not know.
You know what you should have done for that panel?
What?
The perfect costume for Superman 2. You should have arrived wrapped up in the giant cellophane Superman logo.
Oh, yeah. I should have. Should have planned ahead for that.
The weirdest scene in Superman 2. Next year, we are wearing giant cellophane Superman logos.
It's a plan. So I also went to see John Scalzi, who was the writer guest of honor this year. And I've been a fan of his blog for a while. I still have only read one of his actual books, which was Red Shirts.
Yes, I read Red Shirts also.
But he had come to Aresia and I had spoken to him briefly then and told him that Red Shirts made me cry on a plane and that was very embarrassing.
It's the highest form of praise, though.
I had a collection of his essays for him to sign, and he wrote, "Sorry, I made you cry on the plane." And in the intervening years, I still haven't read any of his other books, but I continue to read his blog. He's a smart guy, and he's very progressive.
I did not see John Scalzi all weekend, but I did see his car.
Yes, he was in the parade.
I was walking to my first panel Saturday morning. Yeah, I walked by a car and his name was on the side of it. So evidently he sat in that car to ride in the Dragon Con parade.
Yeah. Then I went to two back-to-back panels because the show I've become most obsessed with in the last year is A Discovery of Witches, which is based on a trilogy of novels. So they did a panel on just the show, but then there was a panel on the books. So they segregated the discussions so that they were just covering one or the other. But a lot of people during the TV panel were saying, "Oh, you got to read the books. You got to read the books."
Well, sure. Did any people in witch costumes and/or actual witches show up?
There might have been some actual witches. I was suspicious of some of those people. And that was it for my day.
Yeah, while you were off doing that, I didn't have anything else scheduled after the Justice Society thing. And however, I got in touch with Kate from Strange Animals Podcast, because again, I felt bad that I barely got to even say hello to her Saturday morning, but both of our schedules were wide open Saturday evening. So we met up and we got ourselves some pizza pie. And then more importantly, we found somewhere to devour the pizza pie.
Outdoors, yeah.
Outdoors, yes. We found a little spot off on the side of the Hilton. Found a spot we could just hang out, which we did. We spent a long time just hanging out, chomping on our pizza and chatting, which was very nice.
Yeah, because Kate is awesome. Thanks to her, I know what ice worms are.
Kate taught us about ice worms. She knows all about all the weirdest animals in the world, and you can learn about them every week on the Strange Animals Podcast. And yeah, we adore Kate, so it was so nice to get to really hang out and spend some quality time with her.
Yeah, she's so much fun, and I was glad to be able to sit in a couple panels with her and joke around.
Yeah, and then, yeah, I you know, wandered a little bit. I did much less wandering around looking at weird people in costumes this year than I normally do, of course. So I did a little bit of wandering about looking at crazy people Saturday night, but not too much. And Sunday morning. Now, Sunday morning was the Geek Girls Run. Not an official part of Dragon Con, but there's a group that gets together one morning and they do a little, it's not a race, it's just a run or a walk. People can walk or run, whatever. And it's like a mile and a half course, so it's pretty short.
And Brittany likes to make fun of you for being a geek girl every year.
Yes, I proudly am one of the geek girls. It's not just for girls, it's for everybody, but it started as a group of women, I think. Mm-hmm. So it's just kept the name the Geek Girls Run. But anyway, I was not able to actually be part of it this year because I had a panel coming up too close to the Geek Girls Run. I would not have time to do the run, recombobulate, and get to my panel in time. But I did have time to stop by the beginning of the run.
That's nice.
Yeah. And so I went to join the people that were gathering for the Geek Girls Run and said hello. I met a woman named Christine was there who I've corresponded with through the online Geek Girls Run group. So it was nice to meet her in person. She's a triathlon runner as well, wow. I believe. So she's the real deal, you know. And I said hi to Janine, who organizes this whole thing every year. And she's a super cool lady also. She gave me a ribbon, Geek Girls Run ribbon, even though I couldn't run this year. She was like, "You're still getting a ribbon." And then my friend Jesse was there. So I got to hang out with Jesse for a few minutes. And then off they go. I watched them all disappear around the corner because the Geek Girls shall run, you know.
Yay.
Yeah. But then once they were out of sight, I had to make my way into the Hyatt because it was time for Land of the Lost panel number 3. This was the Sunday edition of Q&A with Wesley Yeor and Kathleen Cullman and, of course, the Sleestak.
The trifecta.
Yeah, so this was round 3 of Land of the Lost, and this one was actually streaming for Dragon Con TV as well, or virtual Dragon Con. So this panel went out to everybody through the streaming version of Dragon Con. Plus, it was on Dragon Con TV. So that was fun. Again, a great, great talk with Wesley and Kathleen. But I had to just keep moving after that. This was actually the first of 4 panels in a row I had on Sunday. So I just had to do a panel, go, you know. They schedule panels, Cornflake. Panels are an hour long, and there's a half-hour break in between each panel session, so which is good because in some cases you need that half hour, you know, just to get
there's
to
a lot of ground to cover sometimes to get from one room to the next.
Yeah, or one hotel to the next.
Yep.
You're talking about events happening in separate buildings, some of which are a few blocks apart in some cases. So anyway, I had to leave the Land of the Lost and go back over to the Marriott, back to the Classics track room, where we were doing the Battle of the Fictional Bands.
Yes, and I was at this along with Kate.
You were there, Kate was there.
And that was a lot of fun.
A lot of people were there. That was a big crowd, packed the room pretty nicely, I think. And when I say packed the room, it's still at a reduced capacity. We want to make clear right. they were not literally filling every seat in the room for crowd control safety purposes. And anyway, this was fictional bands, as in bands that were just created to be part of TV shows and movies. That's the concept.
Like Spinal Tap.
Yes. That kind of thing. The Archies.
Josie and the Pussycats.
Josie and the Pussycats. Yes. And I don't think any of those bands were actually in the tournament. This was a tournament. We picked 16 bands to compete. And we didn't even know which bands would be competing. This was not determined in advance. This was, they just threw it out to the audience. Anybody at the beginning just raised their hand and suggested a band to be in it. So we didn't know what was going to happen.
So I suggested The Wonders from That Thing You Do. And they made it reasonably far.
That's right. I forgot you contributed one of the band suggestions for the tournament. Yes. Mm-hmm. I was happy that somebody suggested Eddie and the Cruisers.
Yes.
And in fact, I pointed out during the panel that Eddie and the Cruisers has a connection to the Classics track because of our friend Kevin Cafferty, who has participated in a lot of Classics track online stuff this year. He is related to John Cafferty, as in John Cafferty and the Beaver Brown Band. Eddie and the Cruisers were in this thing.
Can I ask, did anyone pick Sex Bob-omb from Scott Pilgrim?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yes. They were in, awesome. They were in the competition.
Very fun, crazy panel, of course. It got quite silly.
Oh boy, did it.
Yeah. Can we reveal the winner?
Let's reveal the winner.
I suppose we can, because I don't think this is even going out anywhere. And
Hashtag spoilers.
Spoilers.
Yeah, I don't think we can refer people to watch this anywhere.
No.
Yeah, so I guess we can go ahead and spoil it. The winner of the live in-person edition, because they did online versions of this earlier in the year. We were doing online fictional band tournaments.
So those are on the YouTube channel for American Sci-Fi Classics Trek.
Yeah, but the winner of the in-person Dragon Con edition of the Battle of the Fictional Bands.
Drum roll, please, animal.
Was Dr. Teeth and the Electric Mayhem.
Yes.
Because, you know, who was going to stop them?
Absolutely no one.
Nope.
Per animal.
I think there was a Muppet versus Muppet matchup at some point along the way, though. They went up against Emmett Otter's Jug Band.
Oof. Tough competition.
Yep, but they stomped right over those otters.
But it was discussed how Dr. Thieves would really welcome anyone into the band, so they'd probably just wind up jamming with the otters.
Yes, absolutely.
And the Riverbottom Nightmare Band.
They would, and they'd totally dig it, man.
Let's see, so that was panel number two of my run of four in a row. So I had to go running across the Marriott to the sci-fi fantasy media track room for a panel called Heroes in Training, The Next Generation. And this was a discussion of superhero TV shows involving young heroes, like the young generation of heroes being trained, that kind of thing, because there's so many shows that applies to, like Stargirl currently. We've really been enjoying Stargirl, Young Justice, the cartoon, Titans, Teen Titans, all that stuff we discussed. And that was our friend Bethany Kessler was the moderator of that panel. So I knew we were in good hands going in. My friend Cammy, I've done panels with before in there. She's great. She was there as well. Good group to discuss Heroes in Training. And I did not have to move an inch after that. I just stayed right where I was because I was doing the very next panel in that exact same room. I was moderating this one. And once again, Cornflake, you know I've been discussing Suicide Squad nonstop since it came out because I've guessed it on two different podcasts to talk Suicide Squad. And now we did the panel, Suicide Squad, Looney Times. Again, just discussing the recent Suicide Squad movie from James Gunn.
And you know, while you were sitting in that track room, I was actually on a second panel in the American Sci-Fi Classics track. And this was, again, a podcast. This was a recording of Earth Station 1. And we were discussing the 25th anniversary of the film Fargo.
Nice.
Yes, man. Both panels you did were ESO Network podcasts.
Right, so that means people will be able to listen to them, haha.
Yes, both of yours will be available. A few of mine, if any, will be available. Right. But people can hear what you did at DragonCon, which is nice. How did the Fargo discussion go?
I thought it went pretty well, and there was another ESO Network panelist who I hadn't met before, but this was Tom from Double Edge Double Bill.
Oh, right. I did not meet him all weekend either.
Oh, I got a chance to meet him, and he, in fact, said he'd like to have me on his podcast sometime.
Look at you, all over the ESO
network. My takeover of the ESO network will continue. I'm unstoppable.
Yeah, you're the mayor of Chickentown.
Yes.
But the Suicide Squad talk went well, though. Actually, big crowd for that. A lot of people came in. As soon as the room was filling for Suicide Squad, I knew it was going to be a lively panel because I've seen these crowds in this room. A lively discussion about the Suicide Squad and a good group on stage, including, my friend Beth was up there with me as well. And it was nice to see her again. So that was a really nice talk about Suicide Squad. And my final thing on Sunday was, it wasn't until 10 o'clock Sunday night.
And believe it or not, I was at this too.
You went out to the late night edition of Classic Sci-Fi Court.
And sat next to Kate once again.
And yeah, I was wondering how it was going to play Sci-Fi Court this late at night, because I don't think we've ever done a nighttime version of Sci-Fi Court before. So, like, is anybody going to show up, or will everybody just be out partying and not a big crowd? But no, there was a big crowd. I was pleasantly surprised.
Oh, that's awesome.
So many people showed up to be in court with us, yes.
Yeah, because Classic Sci-Fi Court is something you don't want to miss.
It's fun.
It was hilarious.
So Classic Sci-Fi Court, everybody on the panel is acting as a defense attorney, and each of us presents a defense for some movie or show that is generally considered to be terrible. We will try to defend it. This year we had Darren was up there defending Tremors 2. Not the original Kevin Bacon Tremors, but the first of several sequels, Tremors 2.
I've never seen any of those films.
I think I've only seen the first one. Although I know Michael Gross from Family Ties is in several of them, including Tremors 2.
Yeah, I knew Fred Ward was in it, and that's about all I knew about.
Yeah, Darren defended Tremors 2. Gary was up there. Gary's the other director of the classic track. What did Gary defend?
Gary defended, I think it's called The Sword and the Sorcerer. It's like one of those really surprisingly gory fantasy movies of the early 80s, but there was a secret weapon in this movie that was guaranteed to get Joe's approval.
Gary defended a movie that had a Manimal connection.
Ooh.
And meanwhile, the judge in Sci-Fi Court is Joe, classics track director Joe Crow, who is famously obsessed with Manimal. Meanwhile, Gary found a way to connect his movie to Manimal. And so, you know, the fix was in.
Oh, that is clever as anything.
Guaranteed a not guilty verdict.
And we all wound up chanting All Hail King Manimal for some reason.
It got a little weird. Michael Bailey was there defending The Incredible Hulk, which is kind of the lost movie of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah, we did watch that when we did our big rewatch, and it's
a good movie.
Yeah, it is a good movie. Unjustly forgotten.
Yeah, and then Denise was there. I was so happy to meet Denise, because Denise is someone that I first met a year ago at Virtual Dragon Con. I did a panel with Denise, and I thought, what a cool lady this is. And we've done a bunch of online panels together since then. So it was nice to actually meet Denise for real in person. And Denise defended the Dungeons and Dragons movie.
Yes, that looks pretty bad.
I'd forgotten that it even happened. But she actually defended the movie in character. She got in costume as her personal D&D character.
In a fake British accent.
She's in a British accent. Very, very impressive performance from Denise. And my defense this year was of Legends of the Superheroes, which was a pair of bizarre TV specials from the late 70s starring all the DC Comics superheroes and villains, but it was a live-action comedy variety show. It was absolutely bizarre. I did what I could to defend it, which was not easy. Because this is a show with many, many problems.
Well, what fun is it to pick an easy one?
Yeah.
We have a special treat for Flopcast listeners. I actually recorded this portion of the proceedings.
Yes.
By the time you hear this, it will be on YouTube, and we'll post a link.
The plan is to post video of my defense online. So yes, assuming that actually happens, we will have links to watch my defense of Legends of the Superheroes. It was pretty ridiculous.
Yes.
So that was Sunday night. We've got one more day of Dragon Con to get through. That was Monday, Labor Day, and a tradition at Dragon Con at the American Sci-Fi Classics track. Every Monday morning, Joe Crow, Michael Bailey, and me get up stupid early and do just a crazy Monday morning panel at 8:30 a.m., which is not a time that a panel should be happening at Dragon Con, but we...
On Monday morning in particular, after everyone's all partied out.
Yeah, we've made a tradition of this, and I always think, well, who's going to show up for this? And the answer is a bunch of people show up every year, and a bunch of the same people. I see familiar faces in the audience every year, every Monday morning.
Do you think these people might just not go to sleep Sunday night?
Did they just sleep in the track room? Maybe.
Yeah.
They live in the walls. I don't know what their story is. In any event, this year's edition was called Classic Sci-Fi Monday Morning Fun Zone. We had no plan going in. I told Michael, I said, you know what? I'm just going to throw some slides together just to give us something to riff on, which I did. I just threw a bunch of slides together to put up on the screen of like some old comic book ads and stuff like that that we could just goof around and look at. And weirdly, though, the first image that I put up on the screen was of the Hulk from one of the Hostess Fruit Pie ads from the comic books. And by total coincidence, Joe had printed out Hostess Fruit Pie ads.
Oh.
He was going to do live Hostess Fruit Pie theater, in which we do a reading of the old Hostess Fruit Pie ads.
I love hearing that this is having a comeback.
But, I mean, Joe didn't know that I was going to put the Hulk Fruit Pie ad on the screen. I didn't know that he had printouts of the ads ready to go. It was just one of those magic Dragon Con coincidences that worked out nicely. So, yeah, we read through some Hostess ads, and we looked at some comic book ads and other stuff and just had a silly, goofy time. I gave away a couple of weird prizes.
Yay.
It was Monday morning fun zone.
Yes, I did not show up for that. I think
I can't imagine why.
I think when we did virtual Dragon Con last year, I actually did get up for your early Monday morning panel.
Nice. But then you didn't have to leave the house last year.
Exactly. I didn't need to be presentable. You know, no one was going to see me. I didn't have to be on camera.
The next thing I did Monday was called The Super Show That Saved Us, A Salute to Smallville. And I know we mentioned this in our preview episode a couple of weeks ago, but this is the 20th anniversary of Smallville. And actually, a bunch of the Smallville cast was at Dragon Con. We had Tom Welling and Michael Rosenbaum, who played Clark Kent and Lex Luthor, as well as Laura Vandervoort was there, who played Supergirl, and Sam Witwer, who was Doomsday. So they had a bunch of the cast there. In fact, Michael Bailey was hosting the cast panels for Smallville all weekend. You know, I was working with Land of the Lost. Michael was working with Smallville all weekend.
Both classics in their own right.
Absolutely. And it was such a full circle moment for me personally at Dragon Con, because as we mentioned, the first panel I ever did at Dragon Con was 10 years ago. It was about Smallville. So it was fun to 10 years later do another Smallville panel. And also Michael was on this panel with me, which takes all the pressure off. As soon as I saw that, because Michael is our resident Superman expert, and I thought, okay, this is going to be easy lifting. Michael's on board. Don't have to worry about this panel. We're going to be good. And it was. That was a nice talk all about Smallville. Right after that was another roller panel. Or actually, two roller panels happened after this, because one of them was our pre-recorded online roller panel. While that was streaming out to DragonCon TV, meanwhile, we were doing another roller panel live in the Classics track room, and this one was called Critical Fails. And this was just an all-star lineup of awful movies. And some fun ones as well. You know, Attack of the Killer Tomatoes was on the die, and Plan 9 from Outer Space, and there were a lot of movies like that that people really do love, mixed in with some stuff that is
indefensible. Yeah.
Yeah. Actually pretty rough, but that was very fun as well. Some more roller panel. And we actually ducked out of the Classics track room after that, because I took you over to the Walk of Fame room.
Yep.
The Walk of Fame room, that's the room where all the celebrities have their autograph booths. And I'd been there the day before for a while, hanging out with Kathy and Wesley from Land of the Lost. So I brought you over to meet Kathy and Wesley, and they were very happy to meet you as well, and we got to hang out with them.
Oh, they were so sweet. It gave me big hugs and said, oh, you've got a great guy here.
I mean, I spent a lot of time at their booth the day before, and they're so fun. I mean, there are celebrities, there are people that you can meet at these things, and they'll sit there, and they're nice. Generally, everybody's really nice and hi, thank you very much, and they'll sign an autograph, they'll take a picture with you, whatever you want. Kathleen and Wesley and their Sleestak buddy. They try to make it so fun. They have all kinds of little props and toys related to the show at their booth. And when they take a picture with you, they're holding up Sleestak skulls. They've got, you know,
they've got an inflatable raft.
They have the raft there.
Oh, I saw that picture with you, Mayor.
Yeah, that's what we did right there and then. They're like, let's take a picture.
Yeah, that was nice. Kathy said, you know what, let's get a picture with all of us. And so, yeah, we got in the raft with the Sleestak heads and and Kathy and Wesley and took a picture. And yeah, once again, it was nice to see them one last time for the weekend. And because it was such a treat to work with them through this Dragon Con, our friends from the Land of the Lost, of course. And then we headed right back over to the Classics track room because their final panel of the weekend was called Tales of Dragon Con. And that's Tales, T-A-I-L-S, of course. The idea was just to have people share stories, their memories and stories about Dragon Con. Nice and simple. And we were just going to go in to see who was hanging around. And as soon as I walked in, you know, Gary was like,
get up here.
Hey, come on up on stage. You're on the panel. Because that's what he does. Gary puts people on panels. So I was like, okay. I guess I'm on the Tales of DragonCon panel. So I hopped up on stage one last time. And again, this is the end of DragonCon. The room was pretty well filled up. A lot of people wanted to just hang out with us and talk DragonCon again, which was very nice. And people had all kinds of wacky, in some cases, pretty horrifying stories to tell about their history at DragonCon. It was really nice. It was really fun. I gave out more of my ribbons.
Oh, yeah. There was a swarm of people at the end.
I gave out so many ribbons right at the very end of DragonCon. Like, people must have put their ribbons on their badge and then just immediately gone home. Because the main ribbons, I had the Land of the Lost Sleestak ribbons, we had the Howard the Duck ribbons, and then we also had our main Flopcast ribbons said, "You're weird, and I missed you." And I think people really related to that sentiment this year.
I am sure that resonated. I love that that's our slogan this year for our badge ribbons. It just makes my heart feel good.
Yeah, everyone liked that a lot.
So really nice, kind of perfect way to wrap up a very weird Dragon Con, just hanging out with friends talking Dragon Con. I think we were both wearing just a wide variety of silly looking masks throughout the whole weekend. I kept switching out my mask. Well, I was double masked almost the entire weekend, I should say. I'd have like a big mask on and then another like silly nerd mask over that one. And I know I saw a lot of other people as well who were double masked as well.
Yeah. I found that a little hard to deal with.
I would tend to be single masked for panels just because I didn't know how muffled my voice was going to be, you know, getting through two different masks.
Yeah, I'm just imagining everybody with multiple masks sounding like Kenny from South Park.
Yeah, definitely.
It was a very muffled convention. As far as I know, you could hear everybody just fine right through the masks. So that was not an issue. But I had ordered masks especially for DragonCon, so I had one that had the Sid and Marty Krofft logo on it, which I know Wesley and Kathy quite liked when they first saw it. They had special Land of the Lost face masks also, which was nice. I had another Land of the Lost mask also with an image of Enoch, you know, ancestor of the Sleestaks on it. I had my But First Let's Talk Nerdy mask. I had the chicken from Freeway, the Activision Atari game. I had a mask with Activision chicken on it. It says Save the Chicken Foundation. And I think my favorite might have been I found a mask with the Caddyshack gopher on it.
Perfect.
So yes, one day I just had the gopher on my face all day and it says I'm all right. You had some good nerd masks going too, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I had, you know, I had a couple Doctor Who themed ones. I had a Ted Lasso themed one.
Yes, nice.
Awesome.
That was probably my favorite. Yeah, I think I had a Discovery of Witches one as well.
Nice. Oh, I had this. I forgot. I had the silver platters also, the Brady Bunch silver platters.
Yes, Brady Bunch.
I wore that during the fictional bands tournament. Mm-hmm. I had an actual fictional band on my mask, the silver platters. Thank you. Now, as we wrap up, just real quick, we always run through costumes at the end of our Dragon Con review shows. And again, I took far fewer photos this year than I normally do. We will have them posted online. Mm-hmm. But I did so much less wandering around looking at people in costumes than I normally do. But real quick, I thought we could talk through some of our favorite costumes. And I got to say, the costume of the year by far the costume you saw again and again everywhere you look.
Oh, I have a feeling this was the costume seen around the world.
It was Loki.
Yes.
Lokis were everywhere.
I think they would have been prominent in any case because, you know, the Loki series deals with, you know, multiple variants of Loki. But it also took place in the Atlanta Marriott.
There were scenes from Loki were filmed in one of the Dragon Con hotels, and it's very recognizably so. Like, as Dragon Con people were watching Loki, there are shots where it's like, oh, that's the Marriott. You recognize it immediately.
Yeah.
So this was a perfect storm of Loki came out, like, what, 2 months ago? It came out just at the right time that people were still very excited about Loki and had enough time to put a costume together. Also, part of the concept of Loki was variants, that there's endless variant editions of Loki. And so you could make any sort of Loki costume you could think of, and it works. And also, yeah, that's where it takes place, at the Marriott. And so Lokis were everywhere.
I feel like they just should have handed everyone a pair of Loki horns along with their badge. I especially enjoyed the alligator Lokis, because that's a random version that shows up in one of the episodes.
Lots of alligator Lokis everywhere.
A friend of mine sent me a picture of the Delta variant Loki.
Yes, oh, yeah.
There was a Delta variant. This was a woman in a Delta Airlines flight attendant, but also with the Loki horns and whatnot, and she was a Delta variant.
I saw that picture and I said, I think she won Dragon Con.
A little dark humor, I suppose, but it was also clever and in a very nice costume.
But are you telling me that with all the Loki hype, nobody dressed up like Vision dressed as a turkey?
I didn't see any turkey Visions anywhere.
Aw.
I did see a couple of Wandas. Like, I saw like a black and white Wanda.
That's neat.
From early in the series.
There was a Wanda. I didn't see her in person, but I saw a picture online. There was a WandaVision woman. She was transitioning from black and white to color.
That's cool.
It was going like in a wavy line up the middle of her body. She was half black and white, half color.
That is neat.
Just remarkable. Yeah. And my favorite Loki variants, though, there was a Pac-Man Loki and a Qbert Loki.
Yeah, those were definitely something else.
They were great. Yeah, you were with me that night when we saw Pac-Man Loki walking by, and I just had to go chasing after.
Right.
I was like, I'll be right back. I have to go find Pac-Man Loki. And Qbert was there also. They were my favorites. The Yip Yips were there once again this year.
Yeah, I think there were more Yip Yips than I've seen in a group before.
Always a favorite. Cornflake has been a Yip Yip at times.
Yes.
Yeah, easy to mask up with a costume like that.
Yes. Sure. I saw a woman who was the Brady Bunch, all of them. She was holding the grid in front of her, like the 3x3 Brady Bunch opening theme grid. So her face was sticking out of the top center Carol Brady spot, and all the other Brady heads were all around her. And I think they could pop open, like you could take out some of the Brady faces and have other live people peeking through as well.
That's a good photo op, yeah.
I saw a great costume based on the Harley Quinn cartoon series, because part of her gang is a King Shark, who's like a giant shark dude. He's in Suicide Squad also, but he's one of Harley Quinn's henchmen on her cartoon. There was a King Shark costume, but it was King Shark carrying Dr. Psycho, because Dr. Psycho is this little tiny guy who's also on the Harley Quinn cartoon. So this was a guy, like the real guy inside the costume. His head was Dr. Psycho's head, but it looked like he had like a little body that was strapped to King Shark, who was carrying a Dr. Psycho. It was very clever.
Yeah, you need to see the picture.
Yeah, there was Harley Quinn was hanging out with them as well. I liked that one a lot. I think my favorite costumes of the whole weekend, though, were at one point I looked up and coming right at me from the Star Wars Holiday Special.
Oh.
There were two Wookiees. I assume it was Chewbacca and Mala, but two Wookiees in their red robes for Life Day. They were wearing the robes and carrying the little glowing circle things.
That is awesome.
And they had Boba Fett was with them as well, but it was Star Wars Holiday Special Boba Fett. His coloring on the costume was just like the cartoon version from the Holiday Special.
That's so neat.
That was terrific. That was the best. So yeah, a very, very bizarre year at Dragon Con, but a lot of good stuff happened. We saw our people, most of them. We didn't see their mouths.
Right.
We didn't see their mouths or their noses. We saw the rest of them, and we liked it. Hopefully next year, be slightly back to normal. Not that Dragon Con is ever really normal, but we'll see how it goes. But yeah, so great to see everybody. And again, I've been locked down so hard that it was just a complete 180 to suddenly be around so many old friends for a change. And we always want to say special thanks to Joe and Gary and Kelly and all the track directors that program all the wonderful things that we are honored to be a part of at Dragon Con every year. They make it so fun and so special. And this year it was just so crazy special having Wesley and Kathleen there from Land of the Lost, of course, on top of that. So absolutely. In a horrifying year, these people made something really good happen. So thanks for that, everybody. Cornflake, that about enough Dragon Con talk for you?
Well, it sounds like it was a tremendously special Dragon Con, and so I was glad to hear all of it. But yes, that does sum it up nicely.
Let's go ahead and wrap this up then.
Okay. Flopcast.net. Check it out. You're going to see some show notes from this show and all the shows that we've had, but there's going to be some cool things you'll want to see from Dragon Con as the show notes for this show go up. Facebook.com/Flopcast is another place you can find us. We're also on Twitter. Our handle is @Flopcast. And we are on Instagram. Our handle there is the_Flopcast. Over on Apple Podcasts, you can, and we'd love it if you do, leave us a rating and or a review. Music for the Flopcast is written and performed by the Sponge Awareness Foundation.
Of course. And you know, in my heart, the Sponge Awareness Foundation will always be a fictional band. Cornflake, thanks for enduring another long Dragon Con review episode.
Oh, thank you, Mayor and Kevin, for bringing it back to me.
Yeah, the mayor of Chickentown, especially. Great to have you back on the Flopcast again after way too long.
It was great to be back, and it was great to be at Dragon Con with you.
Yes, and everybody, thanks for joining us for a little Dragon Con talk one more time. 1989 coming up, the finale of our 80s shows will be next week.
Oh, that'll be interesting because I remember even less from 1989 than I do from 1988.
Meanwhile, everybody, please be safe. Be good, be kind, be silly. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Peace and slee stacks.
Star Trek is a vision.
Great storytelling.
My favorite TV show of all time.
I really love it, and it's so much fun.
Join our crew aboard Earth Station Trek for your regular podcast escape into the Trekverse.
Make it so.
Let's see what's out there.
Wait a minute. I thought we all agreed to say make it so.
No, let's go. It's fun.
But make it so is iconic. It's classic.
It's too iconic.
So we're all going to do make it so?
No.
Welcome to Dr. Geek's Laboratory.
Dr. Geek here with another reminder that the ESO Network is pro-science and pro-vaccine. We urge you to be a superhero and protect yourself, your family, and your fellow geeks around the world. Don't be fooled by the forces of evil and their anti-science misinformation campaign. Consult the latest CDC guidelines, your doctor, and get the COVID vaccine today.
So, Brittany, Martha, tell me about your podcast.
Oh, no. It's like we're in sync, but also kind of a disaster.
We are always a disaster.
So our podcast is fun if you want to hear two people talk about and complain about stuff that they love and also hate.
And drink.
And the show is called?
Oh. but first, let's talk nerdy.
And you can find us on the ESO Network.
Ba-ding. See you next Tuesday.
And Cornflake, this is the Secret After Show. I think the mayor is still here as well.
Yep, I'm hanging in there.
Cornflake, what are we doing for the after show?
I hope it's okay that I'm just going to share a random message that I got the Monday of Dragon Con. My friend Santina is now working through episodes of the podcast, and I randomly got a message. Evidently, she listened all the way back to episode 45. That was when, Kevin, you and I were at MarsCon in 2013. My friend Santina wrote, "I will never eat another Lay's potato chip without thinking about Burn My Soul and Pumping Cornflake again. Thanks for sharing."
Wow, that was a long time ago.
What a bizarre message to receive. And maybe that'll be the message we put on next year's badge ribbons.
That would be so great.
The This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network. Be part of the crew and help support our shows by donating to our ESO Patreon or by shopping for the TeePublic store, which can all be found at esonetwork.com. The ESO Network, your station for all things geek.